Most security systems react after a break-in begins. That's too late. SimpliSafe is different. It's proactive. Active Guard outdoor protection uses AI-powered cameras to spot suspicious activity before criminals get inside. Live monitoring agents can see, speak to, and scare off intruders in real time, quickly calling police if needed. To get 60% off your new system, go to simplisafe.com/podcast. That's simplisafe.com/podcast for 60% off. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
Think advertising on TikTok isn't for your business? Think again.
We've generated over 100,000 leads, which has converted into over 40,000 sales for our pet insurance policies. My name is Trey Farrow. I am the CEO of Spot Pet Insurance. TikTok's Smart Plus AI-powered automation takes the guesswork out of targeting, bidding, and optimizing creative. If I can advertise on TikTok, you can too.
Drive more leads and scale your business today, only on TikTok. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTokAds.
Ark Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure game where most of humanity shelters underground. But Raiders rise to the surface in search of something greater. In the Rust Belt, danger isn't the end of the story. It's the beginning of the adventure. Every journey above ground is a gamble against the relentless machines of Ark and rival Raiders chasing the same dream. Explore a lethal yet vibrant world scarred by old conflicts and reclaimed by nature, where shifting conditions make every high-stakes run unpredictable. Ark Raiders. Available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X, S, and PC. Rated T for Teen.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Veneria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Veneria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
We got to save it a pasta. We cannot see the end of Italian pasta because of tariffs. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. As we begin our fourth and final hour on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT, I'm excited. I'm going to get into this story with you in a few minutes about a hiker who the president just pardoned. This is a story that's not getting nearly enough attention, but it has to do with the president's executive order to end the overcriminalization of our government by all of these various executive agencies that write their own laws, essentially, even though they're not laws because they're not passed by Congress, that carry jail time and fines. And you have no idea how many there are. There's over 300,000 of them, but we don't know the exact number because we can't count. We're going to get into that. You're going to love this. But some other things to get to as we begin. And the big story of this hour brought to you by Dr. Mike Veneria, Veneria Dental. Those year-end benefits, you may have dental benefits just sitting on the table. Don't let them expire. Please reach out to Dr. Mike Veneria today, VeneriaDental.com, and go see him today for your perfect smile. V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VeneriaDental.com. Covered a lot of ground this hour, and this show, I mean, but I want to get into something. So Kash Patel, the FBI director, came out today at the White House press briefing and said that China, they are shutting off the pipeline that creates fentanyl that kills tens of thousands of Americans. But before I get into that, you know, the Secretary of the Treasury, Scott Bessent, said we're going to get rid of the tariffs on coffee and bananas. Good. What we should also do is get rid of the tariffs on Italian pasta, because we are going to lose wonderful, delicious Italian pasta. Now, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with American pasta. And I, for me personally, we make pasta homemade in this house all the time. We love that. We are big fans of homemade pasta. As you know, my Cooking with Reagan videos, even though I'm not posting them anymore, because ever since Charlie Kirk, I'm trying to keep my kids just off social media because there's just so many whack jobs out there. It's a damn shame. But we make homemade pasta. But I prefer to buy pasta, if I'm going to buy it, that's made in Italy. The flour is less processed than it is here in the United States of America. The Italian bronzing process is better. I like it. I try to find American brands that are locally made and owned. Like, in other words, if there's a local company that makes pasta, I will try to support them. Obviously, we've got no shortage of great local companies in this region that make their own pasta, raviolis, and they make, I mean, there's wonderful, and I don't want to name names because I'll forget somebody and they'll say, I'm a fan, you know, I make pasta. And but I'm just saying, and so if you got to go to the store and you're in a pinch and you don't have time to go get locally made raviolis or something, I would prefer to grab a bag of Italian pasta. But Italian pasta is poised to disappear from American grocery shelves based on tariffs. Italy's biggest pasta exporters say import and anti-dumping duties totaling 100% on their pasta brands will make doing business in America too costly and are preparing to pull out of U.S. stores as soon as January. The combined tariffs are among the steepest faced by any product targeted by the Trump administration. It's an incredibly important market for us, said Giuseppe Ferro, La Molesana's chief executive, whose family-run pasta factory sits on the edge of the southern Italian town of Campobasso. But no one has these kinds of margins, he said, shaking his head as the sweet, nutty smell of freshly ground wheat berries permeated his factory. This is from Wall Street Journal. The U.S. Commerce Department has announced a 92% anti-dumping duty on pasta made in Italy by La Molesana and 12 other companies, which import the bulk of pasta from Italy to the U.S. That is on top of the Trump administration's 15% tariff on imports from the European Union. Now, look, I as I mentioned, there's wonderful places around here that make their own pasta. But for a lot of families, if they go to the grocery store, they're forced to buy mass marketed American made pasta, which I've said before, the flour, it's much more processed here than it is over in Italy. That's why people go to Italy and they say, I felt great. I had pasta all the time. I felt great. There's less processing in the wheat over there. It's just a fact. It is what it is. And until we can clean up our food supply and our food system in this country, that's the deal. Pasta is a very economic way to feed a family. And when we did our Zioli Army trip to Italy years ago in the Tuscany Raiders, and we asked the woman who was the tour guide, who was a nanny in Milano, and I asked her, how often do Italians eat pasta? And she said, 5 days a week, you know, five, probably, maybe seven. So a couple of days they might have pizza, though. And the anti-carb thing is not like it is in the United States. And I think a big part of the reason is it's not the pasta. It's a lot of the processing that goes into our pasta that's made and mass marketed by big companies in the United States. So if I can get imported pasta, I like that. I prefer it. I think it tastes better. That's me. So this is stupid. And if we're going to end tariffs on bananas and coffee, then let's end tariffs on this too. The Commerce Department acted after a long-running probe into pricing practices for the product that goes into everything from spaghetti bolognese to mac and cheese. The severity of the decision has stunned one of Italy's most iconic industries and has escalated into a diplomatic dispute between Washington and Rome, which is determined to combat the tariff. It would be a real shame to have the market snatched from us for no real reason, said Ferro. La Molesana and other companies are asking the Commerce Department to revise its assessment in its final ruling. For Ferro, the fight is personal. He bought La Molesana, which was bankrupt at the time, in 2011, and turned it around, making it one of Italy's leading pasta factories with annual revenue of around $400 million. Exports to the U.S. have been key to that success. Production lines in La Molesana's factory hum around the clock. Dozens of pasta formats made with flour from the company's own mill are shaped by traditional bronze dies or perforated discs. Always go bronze dye, by the way. Always go bronze dye. Varieties range from classic durum wheat spaghetti to heart-shaped rigatoni and whole wheat striped bow ties. La Molesana is small compared with the U.S.'s major pasta producers. There are about 350 people work at the Campobasso factory, but the local economy in the struggling valley in Italy's Apennine Mountains relies on it. Anti-dumping probes into Italian pasta makers are nothing new. The Commerce Department has been inspecting them since the mid-1990s, when it found that many importers were flooding the U.S. with pasta priced below normal market prices in a bid to undercut their U.S. competitors. American pasta makers have regularly filed anti-dumping complaints against Italian imports since then. Reviews by the Commerce Department have often found one or more Italian companies guilty of underpricing their pasta. I know, we're all shocked by that, that the Italians will be playing a game. I know, I'm just as shocked as you are. But the penalties were usually small. Italian makers shrugged and saw it as part of the cost of doing business in the U.S. All pasta makers, big and small, know how to export pasta to the U.S. You have to pay a tariff. Said Enrico Masseri, a Naples-based accountant specialized in fighting U.S. anti-dumping cases on behalf of Italian pasta companies. Italian companies were convinced that products made in Italy, the birthplace of pasta, and it is Italy, not China, would retain their appeal with consumers. But now they're potentially facing the end of Italian pasta. Some pasta makers suspect the duties are about more than cheap spaghetti. This isn't about dumping. It's an excuse to block imports, said Cosimo Rummo, CEO of Rummo Pasta, one of the affected companies. So if we're going to get rid of it for coffee and for bananas, and I get the argument that says, well, we can't grow those things here in America. We can make pasta here in America. Yeah, but this whole thing, as Larry Kudlow said earlier today, is supposed to be based about national security. There's no national security basis to deal with pasta regulations under executive order. If Congress wants to pass some sort of a thing, that's Congress's prerogative, although I would advise them against it. But nevertheless, the president's got to be careful here. Okay, because the power that he's relying on, which is the power the Supreme Court is testing, has to do with national security. It's very difficult to make a national security argument that Italian pasta is hurting the United States of America. Like, I get it with steel. I understand that point on steel. Steel and aluminum. You can say, look, it's a national security imperative to have steel made in America, have aluminum made in America. This is a national security thing. I get that. Antibiotics, medical supplies, I get all that. You cannot, with a straight face, you could be the biggest Trump supporter in the world, and you can't tell me there's a national security imperative about macaroni. And by the way, I still prefer calling it pasta, not macaroni. I think the fact that Jack Cittarelli called it macaroni is the reason why he lost. Forget everything else. That is the reason. I know there's been a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking on this whole campaign. Nobody has yet to point that out but me. And on the Friday show before the election, when he said it's pasta, it's macaroni, not pasta, and I grunted, and I knew the election was over at that moment. Obviously, I'm being sarcastic, but it didn't help. Nevertheless, you can't look me in the eye and tell me that there's a national security reason for the president to be able to ban, to put tariffs on pasta. Unless you could prove to me that the mafia was lacing pasta with fentanyl in an attempt to kill Americans or get them hooked on drugs or something like that. And I don't put anything past the mafia. Not that the mafia is real. I'm not saying the mafia exists. I'm saying if the mafia existed. I'm not saying that. I'm just... If... White House spokesman Kush Desai said the Italian pasta isn't disappearing and stressed that the Commerce Department's 92% anti-dumping duty was preliminary and part of a technical review process. Excuse me. The pasta makers still have several months to continue participating in this review before this preliminary finding becomes finalized. Italy's government under Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni is up in arms about the threat to Italian pasta exports, as well as $770 million worth of annual pasta sales to the U.S. And look, we love Giorgia Meloni, and we're great friends with Giorgia Meloni, and Giorgia Meloni is basically the Italian Trump. So let's work this out here, please. Let's work this out. Tariffs of 100% on Italian pasta are stupid. It's dumb. And this has got Howard Lutnick's fingerprints all over this. And I'm sorry, but there's zero national security implication to this whatsoever. But you are going to make me upset. The latest government review was triggered, as in the past, by a complaint from U.S. companies 8th Avenue Food and Provisions, which owns Ronzoni and a couple of other brands, Mueller's and Prince. But I'm sorry, but they're the lesser brands. They're lesser brands. Like I said, there are great American pasta companies. Most of them are local. Most of them are right here in this area. South Jersey and PA, Philly, obviously. But these big conglomerate pasta makers, not so good. I'm just saying. So this is stupid, and let's end this. Dumb, if you ask me, dumb. Now, from the White House press briefing today, something that does have to do with national security, which is China and fentanyl. And here's what the FBI director, Kash Patel, said regarding that.
While at Ministry of Public Security headquarters, I met with my counterpart at MPS, where the Chinese government agreed on a plan to stop fentanyl precursors. What does that mean? The People's Republic of China has fully designated and listed all 13 precursors utilized to make fentanyl. Furthermore, they have agreed to control 7 chemical subsidiaries that are also utilized to produce this lethal drug. Effective immediately, essentially, President Trump has shut off the pipeline that creates fentanyl that kills tens of thousands of Americans. These substances are now banned, and they will no longer be utilized by the Mexican drug trafficking organizations or any other DTOs around the world to make this drug. This historic achievement has saved tens of thousands of lives. This historic achievement would not have been possible without the tremendous team of President Trump, the Attorney General, the Department of Justice, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and Ambassador Perdue in China, whose ground-level engagements were imperative to achieving this result. This is yet another example of how President Trump defends the American people, provides security for the American people, and puts the American people first. This is a historic first-in-its-kind achievement by any president to stop the scourge of fentanyl, and it should be championed by every single American. This achievement will save lives. We are thankful for President Trump's steadfast leadership, and this FBI will fearlessly follow in his footsteps to ensure that this mission of safeguarding the American public is achieved.
Good. Excellent. That's good. That's good stuff. That is important. Pasta tariffs are not important. The bottom line. So I'm just saying, and we understand the difference, obviously, clearly.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different, good different. Try something that feels like you, you know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Old school security kicks in after the break-in. Too late. SimpliSafe rewinds the story, stopping crime before it starts. Active Guard Outdoor Protection uses AI-powered cameras to detect intruders, alert live monitoring agents, and can deter intruders before they reach your door. It's proactive protection, plus a 60-day money-back guarantee and no contracts. To get 60% off your new system, go to simplisafe.com/podcast. That's simplisafe.com/podcast. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
With TikTok ads, our revenue went up $10 million year over year during back-to-school season. Penn Foster is online education. TikTok is great because the reach is incredible for finding a lot of different types of audiences on the platform. Creator content at scale allowed us to easily develop and distribute creator-led ads. Our return on ad spend for TikTok is 21% higher than the next best channel.
Start growing your business today. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTokAds.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Now, Caroline Leavitt, the White House press secretary, was asked about the Epstein emails. And there's going to be a lot more on this, as you can imagine.
Ouija.
Thank you, Caroline.
Sure.
I have...
about the new Epstein emails that have been released by House Democrats. Separate from why you believe the emails were made public, can you address their substance? Did the president ever spend hours at Jeffrey Epstein's house with a victim?
These emails prove absolutely nothing other than the fact that President Trump did nothing wrong. And what President Trump has always said is that he was from Palm Beach, and so was Jeffrey Epstein. Jeffrey Epstein was a member at Mar-a-Lago until President Trump kicked him out because Jeffrey Epstein was a pedophile and he was a creep. And this email you refer to with the name of a victim that was unredacted now and has since been reported on in this room, so I will go ahead and say it, Virginia Guffrey. And it was CBS's own reporting, Ouija, that recently wrote that Ms. Guffrey maintained, and God rest her soul, that she maintained that there was nothing inappropriate she ever witnessed, that President Trump was always extremely professional and friendly to her. And so I think it's a question worth asking the Democrat Party, and you should all go ask them after this briefing, of why they chose to redact that name of a victim who has already publicly made statements about her relationship with Jeffrey Epstein is unfortunately no longer with us.
Well, there's going to be a lot more in this in the days to come, no doubt about that. I have no doubts about that. All right, coming up, the president pardoning a guy who was going to prison for hiking on the wrong trail. No, I'm not making that up. Didn't kill anybody. Didn't smuggle in any Italian pasta. Didn't give anyone fentanyl. He hiked on the wrong trail and was going to prison, but the president stepped in. You're definitely going to want to hear this. This is my favorite story of the day. I'm going to share it with you straight ahead.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Old school security kicks in after the break-in. Too late. Simply Safe rewinds the story, stopping crime before it starts. Active Guard Outdoor Protection uses AI-powered cameras to detect intruders, alert live monitoring agents, and can deter intruders before they reach your door. It's proactive protection, plus a 60-day money-back guarantee and no contracts. To get 60% off your new system, go to simplysafe.com/podcast. That's simplysafe.com/podcast. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews. All on the app. Download today.
Think advertising on TikTok isn't for your business? Think again.
We've generated over 100,000 leads, which has converted into over 40,000 sales for our pet insurance policies. My name is Trey Farrow. I am the CEO of Spot Pet Insurance. TikTok's Smart Plus AI-powered automation takes the guesswork out of targeting, bidding, and optimizing creative. If I can advertise on TikTok, you can too.
Drive more leads and scale your business today, only on TikTok. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTokAds.
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Well, this is some good news. A guy who was prosecuted in a great example of the overcriminalization in America has been granted clemency. And that is some really good news here in our fourth and final hour on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT, 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. Appreciate you being here. Reason.com with this story. Trump pardons a mountain runner named Michelino Sunseri who was prosecuted for using an unapproved trail. That's right, trail. I know. You were thinking I was going to say drug or weapon of some sort. Nope, a trail. The decision is consistent with the president's avowed concerns about over-criminalization in federal regulations. And good for him. An unbelievable twist that even Hollywood couldn't write. Michelino Sanseri, a mountain runner, announced on Facebook yesterday, "I woke up this morning to find out I've been given a presidential pardon from President Donald J. Trump. This ends what he described as the trail trial of the century. His prosecution for taking an unauthorized route while ascending and descending Grand Teton in record time last year attracted attention as an example of overcriminalization, in particular the way that general statutes authorizing criminal penalties interact with a sprawling federal regulatory code to entrap people who break the law without realizing it." That description pretty clearly applied to Sanseri, who provided the evidence that led to his prosecution by posting a map of his 13-mile run on social media. Now, he had no, the mens rea here, he wasn't purposely trying to break the law or anything like that. On his way down, he briefly took a quarter-mile path known as the Old Climber's Trail that had been used by 6 of 7 previous Grand Teton record holders. As Cato Institute legal fellow Mike Fox noted in March, tour guides who charge hefty sums frequently lead hikers up the same route. It's been described as a historic trail so well used that it's become a skinny single track. The National Park Service nevertheless considered that trail closed, although it notified the public of that designation only via 2 small and ambiguous signs that could easily have been misinterpreted. As the National Park Service saw it, Sanseri therefore had violated 36 CFR 21B, which says a park superintendent may restrict hiking or pedestrian use to a designated trail or walkway system. It adds that leaving a trail or walkway to shortcut between portions of the same trail or walkway or to shortcut to an adjacent trail or walkway in violation of designated restrictions is prohibited. By the way, if you ask me, this whole section 36 CFR 21B is exactly the problem with our government. Exactly the problem. You have to be a lawyer to be able to even understand the parsing of all this. Number one, that's the beginning of this. And number two, you've got to be somebody who likes just pure and utter bureaucracy to even consider how this could possibly make any sense whatsoever. Now, the regulation says nothing about criminal penalties, which are separately authorized by another statute, 16 USC 551. The law says violations of rules and regulations governing the use of public and national forests shall be punished by a fine of not more than $500 or imprisonment for not more than 6 months or both. By authorizing prosecution for agency-defined offenses, Congress had created a bewildering situation in which the average American cannot reasonably be expected to know when he is committing a federal crime. In fact, the Code of Federal Regulations is so vast and obscure that even experts can only guess at the number of criminal penalties it authorizes. At least 300,000, they think. And again, most of these are imposed by the agency. They're agency-defined offenses. So it's not as if lawmakers raised their hand and voted yes to putting a guy in jail for 6 months for running down the wrong trail. Got it? But this is part of the problem. In fact, many, many years ago, they tried to do a whole thing on criminal justice reform. And when they did that, they found that there were too many laws. I'm sorry, let me leave the word law out of it because the law is passed by Congress. There were too many rules and regulations that were promulgated by these various administrative agencies. They lost count. They couldn't do it. They gave up. 3 felonies a day. The average American commits three felonies a day without even realizing it. It is one of those things that I have said many, many years before, and it's why we've had Harry Silverglate on the show in the past to talk about this, because these, anybody, if the government wants to get you, they'll find a way to get you. You're probably doing something wrong. You have no idea. You don't even realize it. And the whole idea that you have to have some sort of intent to commit the law or break the law, nope, that doesn't matter. That doesn't mean anything. No mens rea, no state of mind. It doesn't matter. You're just, that's it. So you authorize prosecutions for agency-defined offenses. Congress says to the agencies, okay, go ahead, you figure it out. The agencies then, which are run by bureaucrats, people who are not in touch with the American people and who love their power and who many of them are, imagine the guy in Ghostbusters. The best example is the guy in Ghostbusters who comes in from the EPA and is a blankless wonder. Blankless wonder who absolutely 100% is the problem, right? Walter Peck. That guy is the very walking embodiment of a bureaucrat who would see somebody go to jail for going down the wrong trail. Walter Peck is, in my mind, the epitome of this. But anyway, as I was thinking about, I actually saw a video. I'm not going to play it for you, but these idiots who were talking about how Walter Peck in Ghostbusters, the EPA guy who tells him to shut down the whole system and release all the ghosts. Ghostbusters is actually a very libertarian movie. It really is, because the government bureaucrat and the regulator gets in the way and then causes all the problems. But these idiots were saying that Walter Peck's a true hero and that if Venkman, Bill Murray's character, had just simply been nice to him and cooperated, then everything would have been fine. That's the problem, though, when you're dealing with bureaucrats. It doesn't matter how nice you are. In fact, the nicer you are, the more they take advantage of you. And this runner was very nice and said he had no idea what he did wrong and he didn't mean to. It was never his intention to do anything wrong. So many of these regulatory crimes are strict liability offenses, meaning that citizens need not have a guilty mental state to be convicted of a crime. This status quo is absurd and unjust, the president said. It allows the executive branch to write the law in addition to executing it. I know that there are a lot of people who are on the libertarian side of the spectrum who may not be happy with Trump over this or that, but his executive order on May 9th, 2025, fighting over criminalization in federal regulations is spot on. When he said the United States is drastically overregulated, the Code of Federal Regulations contains over 48,000 sections stretching over 175,000 pages, far more than any citizen could possibly read, let alone fully understand. Worse, many carry potential criminal penalties for violations. The situation has become so dire that no one, likely including those charged with enforcing our criminal laws at the Department of Justice, knows how many separate criminal offenses are contained in the Code of Federal Regulations, with at least one source estimating hundreds of thousands of such crimes. Many of these regulatory crimes are strict liability offenses, meaning that citizens need not have a guilty mental state to be convicted of a crime. This status quo is absurd and unjust. It allows the executive branch to write the law in addition to executing it. That situation can lend itself to abuse and weaponization by providing government officials tools to target unwitting individuals. It privileges large corporations, which can afford to hire expensive legal teams to navigate complex regulatory schemes and fence out new market entrants over average Americans. The purpose of this order is to ease the regulatory burden on everyday Americans and ensure no American is transformed into a criminal for violating a regulation they have no reason to know exists. And it goes on to say it will be the policy of the United States that criminal enforcement of criminal regulatory offenses is disfavored. Prosecution of criminal regulatory offenses is most appropriate for persons who know or can be presumed to know what is prohibited or required by the regulation and willingly chose not to comply, thereby causing or risking substantial public harm. Prosecutions of criminal regulatory offenses should focus on matters where a putative defendant is alleged to have known his conduct was unlawful. Strict liability offenses are generally disfavored. United States v. United States Gypsum. A gypsum company where enforcement is appropriate, agencies should consider civil rather than criminal enforcement of strict liability offenses, or if appropriate and consistent with due process and the right to jury trial, administrative enforcement. And it goes on, and it talks about he wants regulatory transparency. He also wants a within 365 days of the date of this order, which was from May of this year, the head of each agency, in consultation with the attorney general, to provide to the director of Office of Management and Budget a report containing a list of all criminal regulatory offenses enforceable by the agency or the Department of Justice. And for each criminal regulatory offense identified in subsection A of this section, the range of potential criminal penalties for a violation and the applicable mens rea standard for the criminal regulatory offense, that mens rea, the state of mind. At the same time, the head of each agency provides for the director of OMB the report required by subsection A of this section. The agency head shall publicly post a report on its agency webpage. And this is good. I mean, this is excellent. It's one of the best things the president's done. And there's something in here where the head of each agency, in consultation with the attorney general, shall examine the agency's statutory authorities and determine whether there is authority to adopt a background mens rea standard for criminal regulatory offenses that applies unless a specific regulation states an alternative mens rea. And basically, bottom line is this. If you weren't intent on committing a crime, we're not going to go after you criminally and destroy your life, because we want to have that state of mind be a very important aspect of this, which is really important. Trump said federal prosecutors generally should forget the criminal charges, go with the regulatory violations based on strict liability, and focus on cases where the evidence suggests the defendant knowingly broke the rules. Trump also instructed federal agencies to explicitly describe conduct subject to criminal punishment under new regulations and prepare lists of regulatory violations that already can be treated as crimes. Now, after Trump issued that order, the NPS, which initially recommended prosecution of this hiker, the National Park Service, reconsidered, saying a plea deal offered by the government, which included a 5-year ban from the park, as well as a fine, amounted to an overcriminalization based on the gravity of the offense. However, federal prosecutors in Wyoming, where the park is located, were undeterred. They proceeded with a 2-day bench trial that ended on May 21st. So even though the bureaucrats in this case, working under Doug Burgum as the Secretary of the Interior, said we're gonna move on from this, the attorneys, they said, well, the hell with it, we're gonna keep going. Federal prosecutors in Wyoming were undeterred and proceeded with a 2-day bench trial that ended on May 21st. U.S. Magistrate Judge Stephanie Hambrick found this guy, this hiker, guilty in September. Prosecutors offered to drop the case in exchange for 60 hours of community service. The U.S. Attorney's Office described that retreat as an evolution of what is right, saying the decision was made to preserve prosecutive and judicial resources while upholding the best interests of the public and the justice system. 60 hours of community service. Fine. Have the guy go clean trails, right? I mean, I'm sure he'd be happy to anyway. He probably does that. But that's not enough, because the judge was irked, telling Ed Bushnell, one of the hiker's attorneys, quote, "It's an interesting message you send to the public. If you whine and cry hard enough, you get your way." She would not decide whether to accept the belated deal until after a hearing on November 18th, which obviously has not happened yet. Luckily, the president has stepped in and his pardon gets rid of the need for that hearing. And contrary to the judge's take, it sends a positive message, which basically turns around and says that, hey, if this guy was not trying to do something, was not intent on breaking the law, then let's not waste a lot of time on this and unnecessarily punish our citizens. This pardon is consistent with the president's avowed concern about overcriminalization, which was also reflected in his May 28th pardons for two Florida diving instructors who were convicted of federal felonies after they freed sharks they mistakenly thought had been caught illegally. So these guys thought, we're helping these sharks. You know what I mean? These sharks, we thought they were caught illegally. We're going to help the sharks. Two Florida men who thought they were freeing illegally caught sharks are now felons. Federal prosecutors argued that John Moore and Tanner Mansell stole property when they hauled a fishing line they mistakenly believed had been set up by poachers. It was a Monday in August of 2020. Cameron Kuhl and her family embarked on a snorkeling trip in Juniper, Florida, on a boat operated by a company that specializes in shark encounters. During the trip, the boat's crew, John R. Moore Jr. and Tanner Mansell, spotted what they described as an illegal longline fishing line attached to a buoy. With the help of the passengers, they hauled in the line. They freed the 19 sharks caught on it, a rescue operation they encouraged the passengers to document with their cell phones. They called Florida Fish and Wildlife Officer Barry Partolo to report the incident. But the Florida Fish and Wildlife Officer, being a bureaucrat, ultimately discovered that the two men had made a mistake. Now, instead of just turning around and saying, like, guys, you made a mistake, these sharks were not actually illegally poached. They were, in fact, the line had been set up by a seafood distributor whom the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration had authorized to catch sharks for research purposes. All right, so they thought they were doing good. They thought they were doing the right thing. Nevertheless, convicted of theft at sea, a federal felony punishable by up to 5 years in prison. Prosecutors allege that Moore and Mansell had stolen Taylor's fishing gear, which they left on the dock where marina employees discarded it in a dumpster. In addition to a year of probation, the two guys were saddled with felony convictions that trigger lifelong disabilities, including barriers to employment and loss of their Second Amendment rights. They challenged their convictions on the grounds that the jury instructions included a broad, counterintuitive definition of stealing that did not require an intent to use the other guy's fishing gear for their own benefit. Last September, a three-judge panel of the... Well, think about it, what a freaking waste of time and money this whole thing is, right? When they're actually, like, actual criminals out there. Criminals who get a slap on the wrist and are back on the streets, and then we spend so much time going after guys like this. A three-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit rejected the challenge. Then these two guys were asking the full appeals court to reverse that decision and correct the flagrant injustice of treating them as federal felons based on an honest, well-intentioned error. They were convicted under 18 U.S.C. 661. Now, there's no one in the world who knows what that statute is. If I went up to any random person on the street and I said, tell me what 18 U.S.C. 661 is, they would have no idea. Because there are so many of these federal codes, how could you possibly know anything? This applies to someone who takes and carries away with intent to steal or purloin any personal property of another within the special maritime and territorial jurisdiction of the United States. During their trial, they asked the judge to instruct the jury that stealing property means wrongfully taking it with intent to deprive the owner of the use or benefit permanently or temporarily and to convert it to one's own use of another. The prosecution objected to including a conversion element in those jury instructions. The judge omitted it, although he did tell the jury that the defendants maintained they had removed property without the bad purpose to disobey or disregard the law, and therefore did not act with the intent to steal or purloin. The jurors, in this case, sent the judge half a dozen notes while deliberating for 2 days, longer than it had taken to present the evidence against the two fishermen. They struggled to reach a verdict. When they told the judge they had been able to reach a unanimous decision, he gave them an Allen charge, encouraging them to continue deliberating and saying they should be open to changing their positions, provided they could do so without violating your individual judgment and conscience. Another sending one more note, another juror, asking whether they should consider any other defense theories. The jurors found them guilty of one charge each. In an opinion by Judge Charles Wilson, the 11th Circuit panel ruled that Middlebrooks had been right to conclude, based on the relevant precedents, that Section 661's definition of stealing does not require evidence that the defendant carried away property for his own use or use of another. But in a concurring opinion, Judge Barbara Lagoa, joined by Judge Britt Grant, highlighted the perverse consequences of that reading and harshly criticized Assistant U.S. Attorney Thomas Watts Fitzgerald for his imprudent exercise of discretion in choosing to prosecute the case in the first place. They noted that their motivation in freeing the sharks and how they had enlisted the customers to help take pictures while doing so, reported the incident to relevant law enforcement authorities, and had returned the gear to the marina dock as instructed. They thought they were doing the right things. Yet for reasons that defy understanding, this one judge said, the prosecutors learned of these facts and, taking a page out of Inspector Javert's playbook, brought the matter to a grand jury to secure an indictment for a charge that carried up to 5 years in prison. That is a Les Miserables reference. Javert, the guy who makes it a point to prosecute even somebody like Jean Valjean for stealing a loaf of bread. Despite evidence that plainly suggests a good faith mistake, but nowadays you can steal up to $1,000 worth of bread, and even Inspector Javert can do nothing about it, but, you know. Despite evidence that plainly suggests a good faith mistake on the part of the two fishermen, they determined that this case was worth the public expense of criminal prosecution and the lifelong yokes of felony convictions rather than imposition of a civil fine. The government's lawyer likened the case to car theft on federal property. The judge said there's no comparison to that. That's ridiculous. And said, I have a different analogy for you. Imagine that Bob is walking along a path in a federal park, sees a man rush up to an elderly woman from behind, pull a gun from his pocket and yell, give me your purse or I'll shoot. Bob rushes the robber, yanks the gun from his hand and ushers the old woman out of harm's way. What if what Bob witnessed was not a genuine robbery, but a scene being acted out by some students from a local community college? In other words, the robber was not a robber at all, but the elderly woman's scene partner for drama class. Bob, of course, had no way of knowing that when he interrupted what he believed to be a violent crime. Under the government's theory in the case, and as broadly as the government did here, this genuine mistake would be of no moment whatsoever, because all that matters is that Bob took the robber's property with the intent to deprive him of it, regardless of the fact that he thought the guy was committing a crime and robbing the old woman. And this is what happens when you have prosecutors, and I give this judge great, because the judge did a great job of saying, you know, this is what happens when you have prosecutors who completely ignore the mens rea, completely ignore intent, and try to make people lifelong felons. Lifelong felons. And the president pardoned these two guys on May 28th. Sinceri's prosecution provoked criticism, this is back to the hiker now, from two members of the House Judiciary Committee who saw it as inconsistent with Trump's executive order. Representative Harriet Hageman, Republican of Wyoming, and Andy Biggs of Arizona said the following. President Trump instructed all federal prosecutors to prioritize civil and administrative remedies over criminal enforcement where conduct was unintentional, non-harmful, or gained no advantage. After Sinceri was cited for using a prohibited trail, the two congressmen said, or congresspeople, he took responsibility for his actions, expressed regret, and volunteered to help officially close the alternate path, which receives regular foot traffic. They said the decision to prosecute him anyway appears to be a prime example of the problem of overcriminalization. Big cited the case when he introduced the Mens Rea Reform Act of 2025, which applies to federal statutory or regulatory offenses that lack an explicit standard regarding the defendant's state of mind. That bill would require prosecutors in such cases to prove that the defendant knowingly met each element of the offense. The Pacific Legal Foundation, they do a great job in defending people like this, welcomed the president's pardon and said, we are thrilled that the nightmare is over, but we're not done fighting against unconstitutional regulations that give low-level park officials the power to criminalize harmless conduct. We are ready to help other Americans who face criminal prosecution for breaking park rules that were illegally created. So bravo to President Trump for putting out this order in the first place, pardoning this guy, pardoning the fishermen, and pardoning others as well. You're not going to hear about this in the news. You'll only hear about Rudy Giuliani. But stuff like this is what really matters to American people, because these are just average, everyday citizens who don't have. And the expense they have to go to mount a criminal defense, by the way. Let's not forget that part of this story, too, because it ain't cheap. All right, that's the show. Have a great rest of your night tonight. Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla is up next. Keep the conversation going on X at Rich Zeoli. Thank you.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Old school security kicks in after the break-in. Too late.
Simply Safe rewinds the story, stopping crime before it starts. Active Guard Outdoor Protection uses AI-powered cameras to detect intruders, alert live monitoring agents, and can deter intruders before they reach your door. It's proactive protection, plus a 60-day money-back guarantee and no contracts. To get 60% off your new system, go to simplysafe.com/podcast. That's simplysafe.com/podcast. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
With TikTok ads, our revenue went up $10 million year over year during back-to-school season. Penn Foster is online education. TikTok is great because the reach is incredible for finding a lot of different types of audiences on the platform. Creator content at scale allowed us to easily develop and distribute creator-led ads. Our return on ad spend for TikTok is 21% higher than the next best channel.
Start growing your business today. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
Ark Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure game where most of humanity shelters underground. But raiders rise to the surface in search of something greater. In the Rust Belt, danger isn't the end of the story. It's the beginning of the adventure. Every journey above ground is a gamble against the relentless machines of Ark and rival raiders chasing the same dream. Explore a lethal yet vibrant world scarred by old conflicts and reclaimed by nature, where shifting conditions make every high-stakes run unpredictable. Ark Raiders. Available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X, S, and PC. Rated T for Teen.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
When was the last time you thanked God for your healthcare? At Redeem HealthShare Ministry, it's not just about paying medical bills. It's about honoring Christ and relieving the burden of rising medical costs. From routine checkups to life surprises, Redeem offers affordable, flexible programs supported by a caring Christian community. Say amen to healthcare that fits your faith and your budget. See how it works at redeemhealthshare.org.